Attention. The National Weather Service has issued a hurricane warning for the entirety of the National Hockey League. Please stay tuned for further information from the Storm Cellar.
Welcome back to the Storm Cellar. Brad and Ray, back with you as always. We also have a special guest. A guest in my own state for once, Ray. It's nice to talk to somebody who's kind of local to me, being 600 miles from Edwards Mill Road. It's cold here. It's about, I don't know, -2 or -3 Celsius. We got snow on the ground. How are things up in the true Great White North? Because y'all have really gotten like the really bitter cars can't charge kind of cold, right?
Oh man, we had a snap and a half. Let me tell you, it was quite chilly indeed. I guess that's what we get for bragging about not really having winter. It pulls up and just lambastes all of North America, frankly, with all the cold and snow and stuff. It's been nuts, but made good for staying inside and watching your team play.
Yeah, right.
Reasonably well, right? And yeah. There's a lot of teams that are doing well, the Canes included. But you know what? It gives you a chance to prepare for a special guest that joins us in the Storm Cellar. And just right off the top, he's a runner, and he's going to be in the Boston Marathon. And I'm telling you, Brad, I couldn't do the marathon unless I had a pork chop or a steak dangling in front of my nose. And I might spend all of my time at the start line trying to find a way to capture it, you know, just right there, not bother running at all. I'd just be trying to capture the pork chop.
I live a mile off the marathon route, and I could probably run to the marathon route and then take a break and then run back to the house. But like, that's about as far as I'm running. Unless there are like bears involved or big cats. I'm not that mobile.
It's not happening, but our guest is going to be there. We're going to find out all about that. But more importantly, he's a caniac and jerk just like us. Aaron Cohen, thank you so much for joining us. We've been following you for a long time. We got a chance to actually meet at the Stadium Series game. I got your signature on my flag. And so it was fantastic to meet you in person. Glad to have you in the Storm Cellar. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing great, guys. And definitely thanks for having me on here. And you know, I appreciate the shout out for the Boston Marathon there. And I did run 12 miles yesterday in 13 degree weather. So I had to make sure to get out there because I have to do all this training really, you know, next 3 months. The marathon's on April 15th. So I can't just like sit inside. I hate running on treadmills. So it was good to get out there yesterday in 13 degrees, get that run done. So now I know I can kind of, you know, do that in that type of weather too. So, but I moved to Boston last July. So it's been nothing but kind of nice and then getting colder and colder. So it's been an interesting start to the winter here.
We're coming into the cold stretch. So like the cold stretch starts about now and normally lasts for like the end of February. So it gets... Okay. It generally gets worse before it gets better, but you know.
So Aaron, if you've heard the show, our guests know what's coming. We were going to find out the story of Aaron the Caniac, how he became so. Were you with the team right from the beginning, or did you migrate from another squad? I mean, there's all sorts of information we need to hear from you. Tell us all about it. What's your story as a Caniac?
Yeah, so really the only team I migrated from would be the Raleigh Ice Caps to the Carolina Hurricanes. And that's so actually my father is from Hartford, Connecticut. He grew up in Hartford, then moved to North Carolina. And he jokes, he says, the Whalers, you know, followed him to North Carolina. But he would always bring my family, my brother, my mom and I to Raleigh Ice Caps games, Jordan Arena. We went to many of those. And then he got really excited when he saw, that we're going to get a hockey team here in 97. So we ended up getting season tickets in 99. It's the first year they were in Raleigh, but we would go drive out to Greensboro to some of those games. I want to say probably I went to maybe three or four each of those first 2 years in Greensboro. I mean, my biggest memory of those first 2 years was the playoff game I went to. It would have been I guess it would have been game five against the Bruins, their second year there in Greensboro, I believe, the overtime game. And that was my very first playoff hockey game. And so that was just an amazing experience. I remember there were the Bruins fans sitting near me there that asked me, they kept asking me, why are you a Canes fan? And I remember answering to them, I like Keith Primo. I remember saying, yeah, Keith Primo is my favorite player. I like him, which now, I mean, that's just feels like many lifetimes ago at this point. But yeah, I mean, that was my very first introduction to the Canes. Father introduced me to hockey, and I love going to hockey games with my family. And then getting the season tickets in 99, we always had a group of others too. So I think we kind of shared maybe six or seven full season tickets with a group. We had the spreadsheet where we kind of picked different games to go to. And that was just so much fun. I graduated from high school in 2001, went to college at UNC Charlotte, and then just continued driving back to Raleigh for games. So actually nice. When I really became a big, big fan and got enwrapped in all of it would have been the 02 playoffs, the run to the final, and then also the year before against the Devils when we, you know, went down 3-0, then made it a series, you know, won the next two games. They had the big cheer at the end of that game. So then it was awesome to see them come back that next year against the Devils, beat them, and then run to the finals. So that just kind of really got my attention and made me a big, big fan. So
that's awesome. Of course, there's some great memories in there. The trip to Greensboro, can you talk about that just for a little bit? Because that's one of the things that you heard from every player, that it was so difficult, so hard. And then the big tarps, you know, in the stands and stuff like that. It was demoralizing maybe a little bit. What was that trip like? I mean, you were a kid, but all the same, it's a long trip to make it to those games.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird. I mean, especially if you think stadium series versus thinking back to Greensboro. I mean, if you told me something then, like, hey, we're going to pack the entire football stadium with tens of thousands of fans to see this outdoor hockey game after Greensboro the games were quiet. I mean, because the local, I mean, people just didn't know what to do with the team, really. I mean, the Greensboro locals knew it was going to definitely move to Raleigh soon. People, you know, newer to hockey there, and the tarps, and I mean, even that Bruins playoff game, I mean, there are probably just as many Bruins fans there as Canes fans, maybe more if I recall. I mean, this was, you know, so long ago.
Sure.
So, and then, I mean, obviously the team's had the ups and downs over the last 26 years, but I think where it is now, it's never felt healthier. It's awesome to see so many new fans discover it and people sticking around too, for sure. But yeah, it's been awesome to see just the community embrace and so many tens of thousands show out there for outdoor hockey. That was really cool to see. But Greensboro, I mean, that was quiet games, the drive back. So we definitely never stayed overnight or anything in Greensboro. We drive back late at night. And I don't recall if I ever went to a game they won in Greensboro, because I definitely lost that playoff game. And I went to maybe, you know, two or three games each season, but I don't remember there ever being like an exciting car ride back. So, it was still fun. It was hockey.
Sure.
Yeah. And to speak to that, Aaron, so what I was going to say, Ray, was even the wins, you're pumped, right? And it, when you're at, like, you know, PNC or the stadium series, there's a crowd and people kind of linger, and you have that feeling for a while. And in Greensboro, everybody hit the doors like as soon as possible, because you have an hour and a half back to Raleigh, Durham, Cary, wherever you're coming from. And it's a long ride home even after a win, because, well, you know, once you get in the car, you kind of deflate really quickly. Because now you're in drive mode and you're like totally out of game mode, because it's not like, oh, I got to drive 15, 20 minutes home. It's I got a trip ahead of me. And so even the wins were kind of weird, because you had that feeling. And then, like, once you like pull like onto like I-40, you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'll put some music on. And by the time you're home, like the game is, you know, almost like, you know, like way behind you, right? It's not like, oh, it happened an hour ago. It's like, oh, remember that time we went to a hockey game in Greensboro? Oh, it was today? Oh, it feels so long ago because we had to drive home. And yeah, so even the wins were kind of, I mean, I get players who didn't enjoy the experience because it was rougher for them. because they're trying to get in the groove and everything, and it's just not possible. Like Aaron said, I mean, Greensboro had the Monarchs, so they lost their minor league club because Carolina was coming in, and they knew the team wasn't going to stay. And it really was weird. And all props to the city of Greensboro and the fans who did make those commutes, because like Aaron said, it was quiet, and they put the tarps up top. But all that did was muffle the sound, you know. So what sound there was is just getting sucked up by, you know, the tarps and things. And it's when you only have a 4,000 or 5,000 people in a building, and that building hosts things like the ACC tournament, like they're used to that building being packed and loud and stuff. And it was different. Like I get the guys who didn't appreciate that, but I think once they came to Raleigh, you know, totally different experience.
Yeah, and the term that always stick with me, I remember reading that it would be a reduced capacity sellout is what the team would announce it as. So it'd be like, oh, well, great. You know, we filled this smaller arena that we put tarps over, and most of the fans were the opposing team. It's like, okay. But now you know, it's come so far. But yeah, reduced capacity sellout was a term I don't think I'll ever forget.
No kidding.
The one thing else just want to mention, I think probably one of my favorite stories to tell is my kind of journey as a fan, but also it pains me to tell it, the 2006 playoffs when they won the cup. Essentially, I went to every home playoff game that year, but I missed game 7 of the final when they won the cup. My whole family was there, and you know, they've got amazing photos, and I'm so happy they're able to make it. And my dad loves to tell me the story to this day. So basically, I had the opportunity that came up a year before, and it was a good friend of mine's mother was a high school French teacher. And she said, hey, you know, you can come to Paris, France, if you agree to chaperone the class there, you can come there. It's going to be, you know, end of June 2006. And this was a year before, you know, it was the lockout. And my dad definitely told me when I said I was interested in going, he says, you know, you're going to miss the Canes winning the cup at home. And I'm like, ha, 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 this is hilarious. And then when it actually happened, June 19th, 2006, I'm like, wait. And he's like, I told you. I told you. And, you know, so to this day, you know, it's like this weird feel, because, you know, they had gone there, they lost the game 5, then lost game 6, then won game 7. And to me, it's a weird feeling, the end of that playoff run, because I saw it all. And then in Paris, I couldn't even watch the game, because like my laptop, there was something with the charger that died. I couldn't plug it in to watch it. It was like 4 in the morning. Man. So I just kind of woke up in the morning to see they won the cup, see the clips of Brendan Moore lifting it. And I remember thinking, the first thought when I saw they won the cup, oh, I hope I didn't miss a close game. And I hope it was a blowout. And I look, I'm like, oh, this was a close one. And I look and I saw the empty netter. I'm like, oh, this was like maybe the best experience ever for people. They're like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I was happy about it for everybody. But to me, that's why – and I'm so excited about the Canes in the mix again, because it feels like, to me, of course they won the cup, but to me it's like, well, I don't have that memory, even watching it live, or I mean, even watching on TV. So, yeah,
always listen to Dad.
Yeah.
So,
to my son, 10 years from now, when you hear this, Aaron just told you, always listen to Dad. Dad knows best.
Now, Aaron, you made a point of talking about being back into the mix of it. Of course, you were through the dark days too, and you stayed with it and stuff like that. And talk about the transition there, like to have this excitement of a team that is now every year, in the least the past 5 years, expected to go be in the playoffs. That's a much different feel than the dark days, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the dark days, I mean, they felt like they would never end. I mean, the coaching carousel and all the various things that happened during that. I mean, a decade of missing the playoffs. And then now, you know, Brendan Moore comes in, you've got 5 straight years. You know, it's just every year, just despite not winning the ultimate trophy, you know, there's just that enthusiasm about it. There's, you know, you see all the banners up, you see the community embracing it, which for those 10 years, a good chunk of them, you just really didn't see a lot of it. And, you know, the team just wasn't doing great at all. But I mean, there were some tough years too. We missed the playoffs on the last day of the season, a number of those.
Yeah.
Like that was some tough times, but now it's been a lot of fun.
It sure has. And so real quick, before we move on I always like to ask, do you have an all-time favorite player? You already mentioned your first, one of your first memories was saying that your favorite was Keith Primo, but is is he really your all-time favorite, or do you have an all-time favorite? And is it different than maybe your favorite on this squad?
Yeah, so my all-time favorite is not Keith Primo anymore. That changed okay. A long time ago. But I've got to say it's Rod Brindamore. Nice. I mean, I love what he did coming to the team. I love that he's still around here with the team. I love him as the coach. So yeah, I think it's got to be Rod Brindamore. I mean, I've got a lot of players I've liked over the years too, and Rod Brindamore there.
There you go. And you know what? He was such a big part of the 2002, the BBC line. Mm-hmm. The top line was great, Francis and O'Neill playing together with Sammy Kapanen. Yeah. He's on there, right? So you got some great players on that line. But that BBC line was just, it was taking the playoffs by storm. It was fantastic. So, you know what? You can certainly understand why Rod is your guy. There's no question about it. He's fantastic.
Yeah, I used to love the montages there, that BBC clips during it. And I think Francis O'Neill Kapanen and the Fonk line. I remember people talking about that years ago, mm-hmm. trying to make a little thing. But, yeah.
Man. Good question, Ray.
Yeah.
Because it just hit me, because when I think of especially like the 2002-2006 cup run, or I love the 2002 team better. I don't know if that's sacrilegious or not. I don't know why. When I think back to those memories, I go, oh, wait, no, that's really the 2002 team. That like Ming T, and they play in like the Mike Myers BBC music. And, we had Kapanen and those guys. Do you guys have a favorite year, like a favorite roster? I mean,
for me, my favorite's the 2006. But I mean, 2002, it was such a fun group. It felt like kind of a plucky bunch of, definitely overachievers, I feel like, there. And, all these overtime games and every series totally counted out. Whereas 2006, yeah. I mean, we finished, I guess, second in the Eastern Conference that year, I want to say. We felt like we belonged to be there then. We kind of paid our dues. So 2002, it was such a fun surprise there. And then 06, I think probably I picked the 06 team as my favorite, but 2002 was so much fun though.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think some of it's like the expectations were so, not terribly low, but they were finished. I think they were picked to finish last in the league. And they just kind of blew everybody's doors off there at the end. And all those comebacks and right. And like guys like Nick Wallin stepping up, right.
Oh,
OT winners. And I don't know, when my core memories, like obviously there's the 2006, like game seven and things. But when I think of like the journey, so many of the memories, I think I'm like, oh yeah. Oh, remember when that happened? I'm like, oh wait, that was 2002. Oh wait, that was 2002.
Yeah. One of my favorite memories is game three there at home. The first finals game at that point was the Entertainment and Sports Arena against the Red Wings, the triple overtime. I mean, even in the loss, it was just such an epic game. And I still have this memory of, the ice, the puck with like a minute and 30 seconds left. And I feel like Shanahan even like interfered with Battaglia. It shouldn't even have been icing. And then they tie the game and it goes on for hours and hours and hours. But such a good memory. Though, anyway.
Brad, it's you bring that up and like, I think of course the Stanley Cup winning team stands with you and so forth, like it stays with you forever, but that 0-2 lineup, like first of all, because Francis is involved and he's my guy, and he of course scores the overtime winner in game one, which really scared the entire league at this point. It's like, geez, are they really on their way? Because like you said, Aaron, no one expected us to be there and kind of, taking the league by storm. And then they win game one in overtime on Francis's goal. I mean, I was just beside myself excited. And you drop all of those names in there, like Kapanen, Sammy. He is one of my all-time favorites too. Just so fast. And he played so much bigger than he was.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like he's not the biggest guy on the planet, but man, he played big and quick. And And then the BBC line, it was just sensational. I loved everything about that lineup. That was a great lineup.
Yeah. And I mean, to go down the list just real quickly a little bit, you know, Joe Vasicek, right? Marty Zielina, who's still one of my favorites. You had, you know, David Tanabe, you know, you had Ward and Hedekin in the back. You had Svoboda. Mm-hmm. Darren Langdon was like our tough guy, right? You know, little Tommy Westlin. Steve Halko. I mean, obviously, you had, you know, Urbe and Weeks. Like, no offense to Cam Ward. I love Cam Ward, but Archie will always be my guy. I don't know. Everything about him, like, you know, he was like Teuvo Teravainen before there was a Teuvo Teravainen with his answers and things. And just, I don't know. There's, you know, it would just hit me when you were talking that I was like, man, you know, so many of those memories I attribute to 2006 and they're not, they're 2002. And I don't know, just something that hit me.
Yeah. Definitely in memory of Josef Vasicek. You know, by 2006, he'd taken a little backseat. But 2002, I mean, his goal, their game five to beat the Devils is probably one of the, I mean, if not for that, I mean, you have weak save on, I guess, John Madden, and then Francis gets the only goal in game six. But if not for Vasicek scoring in overtime in game five, I don't even know where the franchise is really, because it was that run that kind of captured the excitement. And they probably lose to the Devils because they lost the two in New Jersey already.
And Weeks of Save is still like the save. Ask a Hurricanes fan, like, were you there for the save? Everybody knows which save you're talking about, right?
And that's funny because when you say the save, that one,
Cam Ward on Fernando Pisani.
That is the save to me. Like Cam Ward, because I've said it over and over again. If Pisani scores that goal, the Oilers would have won the game. They were so on fire in that third. Man, that's fun. Lots of great memories.
Ronta on Crosby, last week was almost to that level. I still don't know how Ronta stopped that shot. I mean, that was just nuts.
No question. And, you know, we're having all of that reminiscing and talking about those teams that are great. The Kaniacs and Jerks had a chance to reminisce with a new Hall of Famer for the Hurricanes, Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7. We celebrated his efforts and a great, we got to give the nod to here to the Kings, because like the Montreal Canadiens, the team that shall, and I'm saying it their name this time because Martin St. Louis brought them out, and they were on the bench to pay respects to Cam Ward as well. So I will say their name for that. When they show respect, that's worth saying their name.
That was a classy move.
It was very, very classy. Also, I mean, it seemed natural for the Kings to be out on the bench to celebrate this one as well, because, well, Justin Williams is as important to the Kings as he is, you know, to us. No question. And a great little ceremony. It was a real shame that they kind of bombed the game.
Yeah, it's like one of the few in the last few weeks where they haven't played well. Yeah.
So, do you had a chance to watch the whole thing, Aaron? Or like, because I was stuck working, so I was listening and enjoying, the audio aspect of it, but there must have been something, you know, in the barn and seeing the video and stuff like that of all the players paying tribute. I mean, it sounded great. It must look great. Did you get a chance to see it?
Yeah. So I was watching. So I saw the ceremony and everything.
Nice.
And then, I wasn't able to attend the game, unfortunately, but my parents were there. It's like amazing experience. I watched the ceremony there as part of it.
Nice.
And then I intended to get back and watch the game. I was out. And then it kind of, when I caught up on the score, I was like, oh no, it doesn't seem to be going well, but
it was a tough one. Talk about Justin Williams. What would give me your thoughts on his efforts for the team?
Yeah, I mean, he was incredible. I mean, if you think about people that deserve to be in Carolina Hurricanes Hall of Fame, definitely Justin Williams, absolutely. And, you know, of course, the game I missed, the empty netter, the game 7-1, of course, you know, that's the big image they show. But, I mean, he's meant so much to the team coming back there in 2019, I guess, as well. I mean, you know, he made a huge impact that season, really for the return of relevance to the team. And he seems also just such a genuinely nice guy and a great player. So that was awesome to see him get that type of recognition there.
For sure. And the inventor of the storm surge. Is that mm-hmm. is that fair? Is that that's fair, right? He's the kind of guy that pushed it along to make it happen.
I think so.
Yeah. That's what, I mean, that's what the stories are that come out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always love the storm surge ideas, and it made mm-hmm. me love even more when that's how we all became jerks, right? I mean, you know, us loving the storm surge and the team doing it. I mean, yeah, it was fantastic.
Brad, what was your favorite storm surge? Any?
I love that people ask. It's very close. There's two, but for me, I think it was Brock McGinn's Thor at center ice, where he takes his stick and he hammers it down just like Thor mm-hmm. does, and everyone. Mm-hmm. That one blows out. That's as a comic book geek, that is the one. That is it for me. Although I will say the Holyfield knockout and seeing Martinook dragged off the ice by his skates, like that was priceless too. Like there was a lot of really good ones, but those two are the ones that jump out for me. I think the Duck Hunt one was another really good one too. That was a fantastic one, the Duck Hunt. What about you guys?
I guess it was around March Madness time. I like the basketball one where they brought the little hoop, dribble, yeah. And then he like deked around somebody. And yeah, that's one of my favorite ones, but there's so many good ones because there's a bowling pin one as well.
Yes.
Kind of bowled through. So but yeah, I like the sports related ones.
Brad?
I was going to say same. I like the basketball because if I remember, he goes out there and I think he jumps all the skates. And I'm like,
yeah,
I can't do that. Like in my best of days, like that wasn't happening. Right. But yeah, I think that if I had to pick one, it's the Duck Hunt one. But that's the thing about Justin Williams, right? He's not just Mr. Game 7 for the Hurricanes, right? He's Mr. Game 7 because of both teams, right? I mean, he counts among his friends, Rod Brindamore and Drew Doughty. I mean, that's a pretty good company, right? In hockey circles. But, you know, now, you know, he's working along as like, you know, I don't know what his title is, special assistant or special counsel or whatever he does. But to come back and play and kind of help revitalize, right? He hopped on Rod. I mean, they were teammates, right? So they're on one level, there's equals. And then he's being asked to come back and play for a former teammate. And there has to be a significant amount of respect there. To come in and be subordinate to somebody who you were, you know, and are peers with, right? And so for him to come back and do that and then, you know, stick to Rod's plan, you know, help get everybody on board, keep everybody going, I think it's just tremendous. They couldn't have picked a better person. It sounds like they're going to do one a year. I don't know who you could put in. I don't know anybody more deserving than maybe Justin Williams, you know, after Cam Ward, right?
100%. And so I think the fact that he's back with the team in a special role, whatever sort of wisdom he could impart on players who struggle, who are having difficulties, if he can find a way to prop them up, just, you know, use his brain, right? Like just pick his brain because he had that special something that not a lot of players have, at least in his amount anyway, because like, you know, being special in a game seven is huge for all of these players. It's a dream that they all have when they're kids. It's always when they're scoring a goal or they're doing whatever, it's always game seven in the Stanley Cup final. Like, I mean, that's just the dream that you had as kids. It's game seven. He's, you know, alone breakaway, you know, stuff like that. And for him to be able to do it as many times as he did in game seven, there's something there. And you want to utilize that knowledge and that vibe that he has as much as possible. And I know one guy that maybe he even had a chance to talk to, Marty Natchez. Man. Now, let me say this. I especially, but we've been pretty hard on him. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't
with reason.
With good reason, I think.
With reason,
I'll be the first to tell when he's done a great job. And the first thing that you noticed on the very first shift that he was back on that game on Friday night was his speed. He was flying and he was getting in after the puck. He was actually, you know, digging in at all of the things that he wasn't doing. He made a part of it, and it's why he got the stick on Friday night. Aaron, what did you think about Natchez's return? I had to admit I was a little concerned. His team had been playing really, really well without him, and he had struggled so mightily you wondered if that was going to mess up the vibe that they had going. But I'm super glad to be wrong there.
Yeah, I shared the same concern going in. I mean, the team's played fantastic over the last couple of weeks. I mean, definitely, you know, I hated to see Nate just get injured, you know, but he hadn't been playing well. I mean, and I don't know that maybe he might admit that. I don't know. But like, there seemed to be so many different instances. He looked out of sorts, but coming right in, I think, like you mentioned, from his first shift, like, he looked quick. And I think that's definitely an asset. Like, Marty Natchez being Marty Natchez and playing like we know that he can is only going to help the team. So I think it was great to see him looking refreshed. It was awesome to see him get on the score sheet there. So yeah, I think that's, you know, you couldn't have asked for a better return to the lineup. And, you know, now we're only about 5 hours away, I guess, from today's game. You know, it'd be awesome to see him continue that too.
No question. And Brad, I don't know about you, but I was really impressed, not with the goal, but the handoff he gave to Fishy for the empty netter.
Oh, the empty netter. Yeah, the selfless. Yeah.
Because he could have taken it very selfless, because he could have taken that shot, and it looked like he was going to it, like he turned his shoulders, even like he knew he was going to take a shot at it. And I thought, yeah, he's in a prime position. And instead he lays it off to Fishy for the guarantee. And that was great. That, you know, using your head, that extra pass that sometimes Brad and I give him a hard time.
It wasn't a drop pass. I was very excited.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Go ahead. I was going to say, it was Natchez the shift before that fired and hit the crossbar with it, right? And then he's like, okay, yeah, I had my shot. Let me pass it off here to Aho. So yeah, I like that. Yeah.
I wonder, and I haven't heard anything. This is purely speculation, so I want to be very clear about that. I wonder if something was bothering Natchez earlier. Like, he's had a down season, and after last season, he kind of knows what is expected and what he has to do. Right. Then Orlov hits him in practice. And maybe, you know, maybe he went from, okay, this issue's a 7 to this issue's a 9. I really can't go. And he heals up, right? I'm basing this on like the Jordan Martinook, you know, hypothesis. You know, Jordan wasn't good for like 2 years. And it seems to be that he wasn't healthy for 2 years, right? So I don't know that it's true, but Marty Natchez playing like he did in the last game is what they expect. It's what they need. If he wants a payday, that has to happen. The goal is great. I love the goal. Good for him. He was so much better defensively.
Yeah.
And his decision-making was better. And those are the two things that I'm most going to rag on him on. Like, he can score goals. He has 10 goals on the year. But, you know, and he has 18 assists. So it's not that he's not putting up points, even when he's not playing well necessarily. But, you know, the text between you and I, Ray, like, the back door's open. Oh, the puck's in the net. Who was that? Oh, it was Marty Natchez. You know, those are the things that I want to see him improve on. And to his credit, with that goal at the end of the game, with the empty net goal, Sebastian Aho has 50 points through 41 games. He is on pace for 100. He would be the first Hurricane since Eric Staal in 2006 to get 100 points if they could. And I know that's not what he cares about, right? He's, you know, but for the rest of us, I would like us to have another 100-point guy again, you know.
And outstanding.
At 1.22 goals or 1.22 points per game, I mean, he can do it, right? I mean, he's got 41 games left. He's right on pace. He just needs to keep doing what he's doing. And quietly, 34 assists. It doesn't feel like it, but he's so good, and that's so underrated because he's not flashy and he just, you know, he gets the job done. But anyway, yeah, Marty Natchez, if they're going to make a legitimate cup run, they need Marty Natchez to play well or somebody else to play at that caliber, right? Seth Jarvis has stepped up. Michael Bunting has been getting better progressively. Stefan Nazan has played really well. Like, everybody's starting to feel like they're getting in the groove. And in the last few seasons, the Hurricanes have peaked early. And we can't say that, I don't think, this year. I'm knocking on all kinds of stuff here. I got real wood in my walls. We'll do that. But if they can peak at the right time, that's a big part of winning a Stanley Cup. And they are playing at an expectation, at a caliber that they're not full throttle yet. I mean, we see issues still, but it looks a lot better than it did a month ago.
No question.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, a month ago, we were in the midst of that 5-game losing streak. That about?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, that was where it felt like the wheels were right on the cusp of falling off. But I kind of, you know, trusted the team. I mean, now if you look at, think about the standings, where we are now versus a month ago, we're where we feel like we should be. And I think there, you know, Svech is, I think he's really found the good groove. You know, Svech and Aho for many games in a row, just an absolute heater. Just, it's like, oh, the goal scored. Who was that? Oh, it was Svech. It was Aho. It was one of the, over and over.
The fans have been asking for SAT. They finally get put that back together. And they're right. It's gold. Yeah. Ray's raising his hand. He's been a proponent of that for months.
Ever? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, don't separate them anymore. Find another way to get offense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So now the standings, we're kind of touching on it. You know, what is with the Flyers?
Hey, they've won 5 in a row now, right?
I know. They lost last night, didn't they?
But the Metro helped us out.
Yeah.
Everybody, I think, in the Metro last night tanked. We appreciate all of you burning games in hand.
Yeah, lovely. We appreciate it greatly. But, I mean, we're in third in the Metro right now. But you know what? We can leapfrog with a victory today over the Wild, which, you know, they've been terrible lately. But, you know,
Fleury's out.
Don't want to take anyone for – yeah, and Fleury is out. So, but the standings, I mean, we're in good shape right now. I don't think – it was funny. I saw this chart about someone had put out about where teams would finish playoffs-wise or whatever at various points, your percentage at various points of making the playoffs. And right off the start, the Hurricanes were 100%. Yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs. Then a month in, they were like, well, maybe it's only 60-some. And then a little bit later, it was even lower. And now it's back up to like 90%. You know what
I mean? Yeah, that's what Money Puck has us,
Yeah.
The big thing is, right? I always assume teams are going to win games in hand.
Yeah.
Right. That way I look at what's the worst that could happen? What do we need to do? And luckily people are not doing well, right? We have 2 games in hand on the Flyers. We're only a point back. We can leapfrog them today.
Yep.
We've practically caught the Rangers. We have a game in hand on them and we're 3 points back. So you're right in the mix with the best in the Metro. The good news for us is the wild card. And I always say, you know, look at goal differential. That's going to tell you who's making the playoffs. The Penguins are the only team not in the playoffs right now with a positive goal differential. But they have 2 games in hand on the Islanders and a game in hand on the Devils and Capitals, which would, if they can win those 2 games in hand, that puts them at 49 points and they would be the first team out of a playoff spot behind the Detroit Red Wings. So every year, I mean, like I said, by the time we get to the season, I expect the Penguins to be ahead of those other teams. And that's why, you know, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, but Patrick Waugh is in at the Islanders. They fired their coach because they don't want to be a bubble team again. They have a negative 21 goal differential. If anything, per my very unscientific model, they should move down a couple of places if they can't start keeping the puck out of the net. So, but Patrick Waugh, I mean, so Patrick Waugh, obviously Hall of Fame goaltender, he was one of the people who's always named, you know, who's the best goalie of all time. It's not him, but people bring him up anyway. He did really well in Colorado as a coach, although I always thought he was a hothead. I always thought that of him, even as a goaltender, that he flies off. He's over emotional sometimes. And that's having Rod Brindamore as a coach, who we get all the awesome faces and looks from. What do you guys think, though, real quick about Patrick Waugh? And, you know, if you're the, I mean, it's a Lou Lamoriello team. So the fact he this must have been planned, right? Because he fires his coach and hires Waugh the same day. I mean, with Lou, you never know what's going to happen. But do you guys think this is a good move for the Islanders? Do you think he's going to get them headed in the right direction? Or it's been 7 years since he's coached. So
I don't know, Aaron. Yeah, I mean, do you want to go first? Because I've got a lot. I've got
okay,
a lot.
Yeah,
to say
yeah.
This, I mean, I'll just say, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, just real quickly. I mean, when I saw the tweet, I kind of had to read it a few times. I was like, wait, what? They're firing their coach. Patrick Waugh is in. Like, okay, well, this is interesting. And you know, following the Islanders' season, they've lost so many times in overtime. Well, they have 10 overtime loss points. It's interesting there. They've kind of been right on in the mix. You know, if they won half of those games, you give them those 5 points, they're like right behind us, like right mm-hmm. there. So yeah, I mean, it's not like they've been having the worst, but yeah, I don't know. I'm curious, but yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I'll tell you what. Okay. So I don't think there's another player from the team that shall not be named that I despised more. Like, I, with the exception of maybe, you know, Claude Lemieux, like, I just despised him. And there was no doubt, Brad, you have to admit, he was a good coach. The problem in Colorado was he wanted to be more. He wanted a more of a say in how things were run. And that was not going to fly. And because he's a hothead, he was sent packing. And it's the reason why a lot of people look, the NHL head coaching job is a bit of a merry-go-round, isn't it? Where they rehash a lot of guys over and over and over again, except no one came back for a while. They said, you know, go back into the juniors and we're not going to bring you back. Because he is such a hothead, I thought that the story yesterday was an Onion story. I honestly did. This is clearly the Onion having fun with. And then I started looking around. I'm like, this is for real? How in the world is Lou Lamoriello going to deal with Patrick Waugh, who says now that he doesn't want to, he knows he should just be there to coach, right? That's what he says now. You don't change. There's no changing who you are. He's a fiery guy, competitive, with opinions that he wants to share. And Lamoriello has hired a lot of Habs in the past, right? He's done it. He's hired a lot of, he likes to go to them, right? And so him going to Waugh, I just thought, where is the Zamboni popcorn box when you need it? Because man, oh man, looking at what goes on there, I think there'll be a boost. I think there'll be the, you know, cliche boost of games won by teams that change coaches. But how in the world are those two going to exist?
I have an answer. You want an honest answer? This isn't me even being funny. This is like an honest take. Is Lou Moult. Waugh will get them into the playoffs, and like on the last day of the season, Lou will fire him and make himself head coach for the playoffs because he's done it before.
Yeah, he's done it before.
Like this is not weird speculation. Brad's not on a tangent, right? Lou has done it before. Oh, you got us in the playoffs. Great. You're fired. I'll just coach the team myself. Yeah, because Lou's,
good point.
As you said, people don't change, and Lou's not going to put up with Wah. Like, if it works out for him, great. I actually like the Islanders, so I'm all for, like, if they can get in there and make a run at it, as long as they don't, you know, beat us or anything, like, I'm all for seeing some success there. But it does feel like an oil and water mix, right?
Yeah, I look at it, and like I said, he did a good job as a coach in Colorado. Sure, he lost his mind a little bit and tried to destroy the rink, or part of the rink, going at Bruce Boudreau there. Man, that was something. Those two guys, you know, they were ready to chuck knuckles, weren't they? I mean,
yeah.
Through the glass, they kind of did that one time. They both launched at each other. But I mean, I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I don't know how this is a long-term solution. I'm surprised that they brought him back, but let's wait and see. Frankly, I mean, if it's a Metro team, and if they are in turmoil, that's one less team for us to worry about for me. And that's really where I stand with that. But, that might bring a few haters, because there's a lot of people that really liked him, whether they were fans or not. I just couldn't
stand. I don't know. Hasek's a better goalie. That's
amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
It's just true. So is Brodeur.
No question. Do we want to stay outside the team before we circle back? Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do the Storm report last. We'll fly through the other couple of things real quick, and then.
So last night, I got a chance to see the Edmonton Oilers win their 13th straight game. It was here in Calgary. I was not in the barn, but I was watching the game. And another entertaining one, their goaltender, Stuart Skinner. If you have good goaltending, I guess a two-player team can win. But they're more than just a two-player team anymore, because last night in their 13th win, no Draisaitl, no McDavid on the score sheet. They got their goals from everyone else, and they've got a few really good ones, and they're playing well. They're on a heater, best ever for their franchise, 13 straight wins, and they're still not caught up to us yet in the standings, I don't think. Or are they? Was that 13th one? I don't know. But think, they had to win 13 straight games to get out of the hole that they were in. Honestly,
they're behind us, but they have two games in hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had to win 13 straight to do it. I mean, that's impressive.
They are certainly on fire right now. Is it all Knobloch? Is that the reason? Like, all Knobloch, or did everyone else just decide they, I don't understand it. It's crazy. Team hasn't really changed. They haven't added anyone, but now everyone's playing their game all of a sudden. Sometimes your change in the leadership does that sort of thing. What do you guys think? Because, man, Edmonton's looked great. Like, really good.
Yeah, I think they're definitely a really scary team there. I mean, in the West to beat. And, I mean, the beginning of the season, it was so shocking to see just how awful they were playing. I mean, and I think it was that game where they lost to the Sharks, who were playing. It was like the only team even playing worse than them, whatever they call it, like the Losers Bowl, and even lost to them. Like, well, what is happening here? And then now, to your point, like, they had to rattle off 13 wins to even get like back in the mix of things. They were playing so awful. But I think here, you know, if they can get just adequate goaltending, I mean, which I really don't think they have had. Like, I think the playoffs last year, like, just complete mess. I think if they can just get, like, adequate goaltending, I don't know who can take him down in the West. I don't know, but they're definitely one of the scarier teams there.
And Skinner, I mean, I'll give full credit to Stuart Skinner. He has been beyond adequate. He played great last night, made a few huge saves he had no business making. Calgary easily could have put that one away and ended the streak, but it was Skinner through and through. Man, he was he was fantastic. Brad, the Oilers, I know. Okay, so you've cracked on the Oilers a lot.
That's not how you build a team,
right? Yeah, on how
I hope I continue to be right about that after this year.
Look at that.
And Aaron kind of touched on it. Like, this is how we expected them to play when the season started. And then they just, you know, took a big dump, to be honest.
Yeah.
So the fact that they've won 13 straight, some of that's luck. I mean, sometimes you just have to get lucky to win games. It's hockey. That's not a criticism. It just is what it is, right? So are they going to keep up this pace? No, at some point they're going to regress toward the mean, right? They're going to come back down to earth where they should have been in the, you know, in the beginning. And they'll be a top flight team still, but they're not going to be unbeatable like they are at the moment.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I would love to see, you know, Carolina and Edmonton pick it back up. I'd love to meet them in the finals again. Like, what a story that would be, especially after how the season started, right?
Absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
It would be. We're also going to take a quick peek at the Flames in so much as the trade deadline is coming up. And Aaron, the Calgary Flames have a few players, two of which have been Hurricanes in the past, that don't expect to be there in Calgary much longer, in Hanifin and Lindholm. Markstrom's been thrown out there as, you know, a goaltender that could end up being traded, you know, before the deadline. We're approaching the deadline. What do you think about the Flames? They got a lot of guys that would look real great in Hurricane uniforms. No?
Yeah. I definitely agree. I mean, I see a lot of chatter about Lindholm. I mean, I think it'd be cool to see him back.
Is that just wishful thinking, though? I mean,
yeah, just wishful.
Because it didn't. Because it didn't really, like, they didn't really part on the best of circumstances. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, and I guess how many years has it been now? Has it been like six? All these last years are blended together now.
Yeah. It's at least five, hasn't it been?
Yeah, like 5 or 6 years ago, I feel like. So maybe now it's kind of some of it water under the bridge type thing, or maybe some of it, I don't know. But I do think I'd like to see the Canes do something at the trade deadline this year. I mean, of course, last year, you know, it didn't end up working out for whatever reason. Yeah, of course, you couldn't have predicted the injury to Svech, which was really unfortunate. So, but I'd like to see him do something this year.
Brad, what do you think when you're looking at the Flames? If I told you you could have Lindholm, Hanifin, or Markstrom.
If I'm picking one, I'm picking a goalie still. Spencer Martin gets picked up off waivers from Columbus by the Canes this week. I went on, you know, Twitter and made some funnies and was like, okay, like, enough of the overreacting, like, because that's not the move, right? That move is to allow Peretz to go to the ECHL, which it looks like about 15 minutes ago that they've done. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to Peretz. He came in, like, he's a shutout goalie so far in the NHL, but he needs to develop. He needs to be in Norfolk. He needs time, right? Yeah. So Spencer Martin is not the goaltending move if there's going to be one, which we could spend a whole hour on itself, right?
Yeah.
And just side note, Spencer Martin has traditionally worn number 30, which is not officially retired by the Canes, but he will not be wearing that for the Canes. I think they gave him 41. So, you know, we were talking about the Hall of Fame, Justin Williams. So, yeah, no number 30 for Spencer Martin. The Hurricanes, Ray always says the best, if Gretzky can be traded, anyone can be traded. That's true. The Hurricanes should make a move to improve. Either Anderson's not playing hockey yet. He's working out, but he's not even skating. So he's at least probably a minimum a month away, which basically is getting you right up against the trade deadline. You can't assume he's coming back. I still, in my heart of hearts, don't think Anderson is coming back. I know that Don Waddell told Adam Gold, it could be a month or so. Well, that was a month ago, and he's still not on the ice, right? So they don't know. And, you know, we've heard rumors that he's getting second and third opinions. If you know for a fact Anderson is coming back and will be healthy, which you don't, then you can stand pat. And you have Anderson and PK. Ronta's a third. in case anybody gets hurt.
Yeah.
But you don't. You need to do something. So of the Calgary guys, I would pick Markstrom because he has done pretty well in front of what has been a very shaky Calgary defense for a while. A lot of 5-6 wins and losses up there for those kind of things. And much like Martin, who was playing in front of, you know, the sieve that is the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yeah. I mean, he's putting up almost 900. You know, now he's putting up 3.8 goals a game or something like that, or 3.5, which is not good. But once again, look at the defense he's playing in front of. So if I'm picking somebody, goaltending starts first, because if we don't have a goaltender who's healthy, who can play, we don't have anything. And PK is at least skating again, but he's not practicing yet. I don't think we're going to see him this week, or at least not the beginning of the week. And concussions are funny. He was playing great the last stretch, but is he going to come back and continue to play great? There's so many variables in Carolina surrounding the position at goal. And I think it was Future Canes on Twitter, you know, was talking about something. And my response was, we need to stop half-assing it and we need to whole-ass it. Meaning,
yep.
At some point, you need to say, look, we need a goaltender that can, we expect to stay healthy, that can play. That's they need to make moves at the trade deadline. I keep saying that. They keep not doing it. We keep not winning the cup or getting to the Stanley Cup finals. I don't know who's right, but, you know, at some point, you got to make a difference, right? You got to do something. You know, what's the old definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Well, yeah. I would like some different results. So, you know?
Yeah, I kind of would too. I think before the trade deadline is probably really what needs to happen, because the price only goes up at the trade deadline. People only get more desperate, and the sellers know that you're desperate and will hold you out and ask for more than maybe what you're willing to pay. So do it now. You know, you have a problem. I don't know, Aaron, what do you think?
I like
waiting until the trade
now.
Deadline or what?
I hope they do something earlier than that. I mean, especially, you know, and I hope PK is okay coming back, but you don't want to rush things with concussions. Also with Freddie Anderson, I'm under, no expectation he's going to return anytime soon. And even if he did, he hasn't played in months and months. So I think it's going to be a tough challenge for him to just come right in, be lights out right away. So I'd love for them to see them within the next few weeks here, before the trade deadline, try to find some goalie. I don't know who that might be, but
there's a lot of them out there, right? And who is the right one? We don't know. We leave that in the more than capable hands of Don Waddell. Please, please, just as a favor, this one time, do something like now. Don't wait and don't stay pat. We're going to jump right into the Storm Report. My favorite segment. I always love doing this. It can feel unfair to some players at time, and we're going to do a different version of it. When are we doing the different version of it? That's on the next weekend. Is that correct, Brad?
I think so.
I think it's next weekend. But this week's version is same. We stand pat. One player or aspect of the team for each category, tropical depression, tropical storm, and hurricane. Who's firing on all cylinders? We always like to start with our guest. Which direction do you want to go? From hurricane to depression, depression to hurricane. Which way do you want to go, Aaron?
Let's say depression, hurricane.
Okay, very good. We'll start from the bottom and finish up on a high note. Aaron, what or who qualifies as a tropical depression for you right now?
I mean, I think one of the ones that definitely, I think he's had some really good games recently. And if we think about, so that with the rating, tropical depression still means it's really good, right? Like these were saying like our top three essentially,
it's,
right?
Okay. It's not like the way we put it is usually the tropical depression is the ones that are like in a funk, they're really, or they might be struggling. Then the Storm is, the Storm is in between. They're transitioning one way or the other. They're coming out of a funk and getting better, but not quite peak, or they're going the other way, which has happened a lot of times before too. So, and then the Hurricane, of course, that's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah. So for the Depression, I'm going to say KK. I think here, you know, he has had some really good sparks this season. You know, early on, he was playing, I think, fantastic. I think some of his best hockey since being a Cane. Right now, I do think he's fighting it. Would love to see him get a couple to break out of that. I think he does have it in him for sure. But yeah, I think that's going to be my call out for Tropical Depression.
There you go, Brad. Tropical Depression for you.
I had the same one. KK has done a lot of things well, but he has one goal since December 1st.
Wow.
I mean,
I didn't.
That
see
ain't
that
good
for
anyone who's new. That's not good. You know, he had 15 points as of November 30th. Okay, and now he's up to 18 points. So he's gotten 3 points.
In 2 months.
And that's,
yikes.
I still love the player. Like, I'm going to give him the same leeway we gave Marty Natchez the first time around. But he's doing some things right, but he's got to get back in the groove. And some of that's, you know, swapping line mates around, and he needs to kind of get something back, but you know, he needs to get going.
He absolutely does. Man, that makes it tough with me being the third to pick after that, because I'm seeing a lot of what I would qualify as tropical storms on the team. There aren't many that are really, really struggling. You know what I mean? So if I'm, you know what? I'm going to pick an aspect. Okay. I'm going to pick an aspect, and this is, I'm watching close, and it's like I'm getting nitpicky, but can the guys get their line changes properly going? Honestly, there have been so many times where they have had too many men on the ice, or they almost get busted for too many men on the ice. There was one in Friday night's game where they got called for too many men, and they got away with having five guys on the ice for a penalty kill for a good 3 seconds.
I would say, yeah, like 30 seconds after the initial penalty, they did
after
it again.
The initial, yeah, they almost got a, like, they almost had a two-man disadvantage because of too many men, you know, on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the easiest thing to do. Right? It's not easy. All right. The transition of players on and off the ice, where the puck is on the ice, who's got it. It's difficult. It can cause issues. But guys, you're pros. Figure it out. Okay. And I don't know who's responsible for it, but I don't want any more of those types of penalties. It's like, you know, and for me, a very close second, now that I'm thinking of it, is the offensive zone penalties that we take.
Hmm.
That's got
so many.
Yeah, frustrating.
There's so many.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So that's me being nitpicky, and on a team that I just said, not even 2 minutes ago, that really doesn't have a lot of depressions. Those are the depressions that I've seen, right? It's the line changes that are sloppy and too many offensive zone penalties. Let's cut those out, guys. We're taking too many. We've got a good penalty kill. We don't have to keep proving it all the dang time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it seems like, you know, I was going to say that the refs have it out for us anyway, because we do take a lot of penalties, but that seems cheap. That seems cheap to say. So I won't say it, even though I just said it. moving along. it's time for the tropical storm. Who is on the cusp of, you know, hurricane or downward motion? It's your choice, Aaron. And again, it can be player, it can be aspect of the team. What do you think?
I mean, for me, I've liked a lot of what I've seen from recently Drury and Martinuk. I mean, yeah, Martinuk, he scored, what, a goal in four straight games?
Yep.
I think there, yeah. Which I think that's awesome to see for him. And Drury had been in such a drought, and he's been in the mix in a number of different good situations. I mean, it'd be great to see him just continue to grow into that role and get, you know, scoring goals, which has been great to see. So for me, it's kind of the two of them. Of seeing, you know, some really good stuff recently, that they played hard, you know, and getting rewarded for it.
Awesome. Brad.
I don't know who I picked last time, and I almost picked this player for depression, but I'm giving them a fair shake here. Dmitry Orlov is my tropical storm. And I almost called him depression because for the money, I mean, he got called for a trick, was tripping the other day on a hip check. That's not tripping. That's a hip check. That's, you're allowed to do that. NHL refs should theoretically know the rule. If any one of like four shots in the last week would have been like an inch or two lower, he has four goals in the last week. Yeah. Right. So I feel like even though he's not actually getting the points, his play has improved significantly. He and Chatfield have made an excellent third pair. The defensive side of things I'm not worried about, but for what, like $7 million, like the guy's got to put up points. And he's, even though he's not technically getting those points, he's rung four, if not five, off the crossbar this week in like the last, I don't know, five or six games. You know, a couple, if he takes a little bit of bend out of his stick, those are all goals. You know what I mean? Yeah. So he's like right there. So Dmitry Orlov, keep doing what you're doing. Aim a little bit lower and they'll start going off the crossbar and in instead of out. And then you're getting what you pay for. So he's picking it up at the right time, right? If he continues like this, he'll peak in March and April and May. And that's what we want.
And you'll recall last episode, me with the tinfoil hat, thinking that he's a double agent responsible solely for the concussion that PK had, and putting Natchez out for certain times and playing.
And now Natchez is playing better.
And now Natchez is playing better. Maybe he, in his move, hit the reset button. I don't know.
It's storm cellar luck, man. It's we talk bad about somebody and then they play better.
Yeah, well,
Aho, you're terrible. You don't do anything against the Wild, you bum. You definitely don't have any hat tricks against the Wild without Fleury.
Come on now. You know, 100 point pace. Weak.
Yeah. Nobody's going to hit 100 points for the Canes again, Aho.
Yeah. We're talking to you. Look, if I'm going to pick a storm, this is going to sound, he just entered into this storm from depression, and it's Nate. The way he played in that contest coming back gave me every reason to believe he gets it. And I think, and Brad speculated, Brad and I chat always during games, always. And one of the first things that he kind of pointed out to me was the Canes playing as well as they did while Natchez was gone. He hoped it would be an eye opener for him, a realization that this team can play really, really well without him.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes his value less than going into a contract, you know, year. And if he's going to want to get paid, and I don't think any player really plays the game because they want to get paid, but if he wants a new contract worthy of the talent that he has, that he sometimes doesn't show, he needs to step up. And he stepped up big. The most impressive player in that victory on Friday night, I'm putting him as a tropical storm who is going in the right direction. I just want him to keep going and gaining more strength. You know, that's just what I want for him. It's time. The Hurricane selection. And Aaron, we're starting with you again. Who's doing it all? Who's got it all? What aspect, what player just can't do any wrong right now?
Yeah, so for me, it's Mr. Not at all on pace for 100 points, Sebastian Aho. There, I mean, yeah, I mean he's bad. I mean, with a sec, you know, Svech right there along with. But I think Aho's. I think if you think about now this great run the team's on over the last few weeks here, you know, I think Aho's been a big catalyst of that. He's playing awesome. So yeah, that's definitely my vote for it.
Brad.
Aho's a great pick.
Should we have even asked you, Brad?
Yeah, you should, because maybe I'll survive. I mean, so Svech is playing wonderful, but I'm actually not going to say Svechnikov for once.
Oh, look at this. Awesome. Look at this.
Seth Jarvis in his third year has done everything you've asked of him. He is second on the team in goals. He is second on the team in points. He's a +4. He only has 8 penalty minutes. He is a small frame guy who plays above his size, and the team loves him. When he was picked on a few weeks ago, you know, Jury and Stahl are like right there, like, you're not touching Seth Jarvis, right? Seth Jarvis has done everything you could want out of a player. I mean, he's still a baby. I mean, I know that I'm old, so they're all kind of that age to me, but he has just been. I mean, he's gotten, you know, he's gotten the Stahl line moving. I mean, they were just in a quagmire. Like, they were doing okay, but they weren't putting up points. And he's energized those guys. You know, Seth and the Jordans has been just an exceptional line for weeks now. So all kudos to Seth Jarvis. He's just really having a stand. Thanks, Toronto, for that pick, for moving Patrick Marleau for you. I mean, we appreciate it, honestly.
We appreciate it greatly, no question.
Because y'all could use a Seth Jarvis right now, just saying.
Yeah.
Sorry, Carolyn.
Yeah, my wife's going to be mad at me for that one, but that's okay. I'll take
that. That was on me. That wasn't Ray. Ray told me.
I'll take that bullet for you. Okay, so you took the guy I was going to take, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Would Seth Jarvis be the antidote for the difficulties on the second line?
Maybe.
And putting Faust
back with the Jordans?
With the Jordans, which is always great, and moving him up there to get Bunting and KK going. Like you just said, Jarvis has been fantastic for the third line.
The
antidote?
That could make sense, because you move Jarvis up to the second line, you pull Fast up from the fourth line back with the Jordans and let them go back to just being a shutdown line. And with Jordan hopefully feeling a little bit, maybe he continues, right? Jarvis maybe can get Bunting and KK moving. Then, and he might not like it, but then Marty Natchez can skate with Nazan and Drury, who was a line that worked really well for you earlier this year. Because he gives Drury, you know, an option, and the way he's able to wrap around and control the puck when he's on, you let Nazan camp in front of the net. And that, yeah, I think that would be something I would try. I think that would actually be a good idea. If it doesn't work, then you go back. But we're still early enough. We're still far enough from playoffs. You know, Rod's going to mix it up and be Rod Vlindemore anyway. It can't hurt, because I think Jarvis does bring, there's something infectious about the kid, right? In a positive way. Like, you want to cheer for him. His teammates obviously love him. Yeah, I think if he's able to get the Jordans going, he should be able to get, you know, Bunting and KK going, because the skill level, then he's playing with a more skilled mind, right? And KK doesn't mind going and digging in the corners, and Bunting doesn't mind camping in front of the net. That gives you, you know, somebody who can move the puck. And maybe get, yeah, I would give it a try, sure.
Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I agree with the pick of Seth Jarvis as the Hurricane there. I mean, I think he's been playing awesome. I didn't even realize there until you mentioned it, Brad, who's second on the team in goals. I mean, that's incredible. And his upside is just unlimited at this point, I'd say, being so young. But yeah, and I think it could be a good experiment there to try it out. I mean, also, you know, you don't want to break what's working so well with him on the current line, though. So that's
you've always got the fear,
the challenge,
right?
Though. Yeah, because if you move it, it's like, oh no, why would you do that? He was doing so well with them. So
yeah,
it's tough.
So okay, so we flush that out. I think it would be a great experiment. It might be the cure for KK. And that's really what we need, a lot of that. But look, I'm going to adjust my Hurricane selection. It was going to be Jarvis. But this time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use an amalgamation of the low-hanging fruit tied with the brains that made it happen, the reuniting of the SAT line. That's my Hurricane asset.
Solid.
Putting them all together, and Teravainen and Aho just have this symbiotic type relationship. They just know where they are going to be. And then you throw Svetch, who is in stride, full stride now, when he's playing that big, strong physical game and is a definite threat to score. It's just with Teravainen there, the grumpiest hockey player I think I've ever seen, or maybe not grumpy, just, I don't even know what to say. Like, dude looks so, he's all business. I say that, he's all business. Jarvis is all about making you laugh. He's like one of those guys. Turbo is straight business, and that's all there is to it. And there's something to that, that he brings to that top line. He's got a little bit defense on there, but he's connected with Aho. He makes great passes. I mean, that line has been the reason why we've been playing so well, because no one can stop it. And that's the thing. It's a line that just can't really be stopped. They're playing so well. They are going to get on the board. They're going to score goals. That's just fact. You can't stop it. So that's my selection.
I like it. And real quick, Ray, as we kind of wrap up, at the week ahead, we have the Wild today at 5, right?
Yeah.
Then the 24th, Aaron and I will both be in the building in TD Garden to watch the Hurricanes take on the Big
Good
Bad
for
Bruins.
You.
Yeah.
Right?
Good for you.
Followed with a back-to-back with the Devils. And then, and this circles back to your Seth Jarvis question, Saturday you have the Coyotes, and then the next five of the next six games, so 6 out of 7 total, are against West Coast teams. You have your last West Coast trip the week of the 13th. Before that, you have Vancouver and the Avs, and then New Jersey in your own barn. So you can leave Seth Jarvis where he is for another week.
Yeah.
And then again, starting Saturday or maybe the following Tuesday, you could swap it up. If it messes with the chemistry with the lines a little bit, it's West Coast teams. You're not maybe getting points, or maybe you're giving up the loser point or whatever, but who cares? It's against West Coast teams, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. That could be a way to kind of get maybe a little bit of both. And then depending on what's working, you know, then you have Chicago, Florida, Dallas, Buffalo, Wild, and Columbus to finish up February. So once again, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 3 West Coast teams. You have Buffalo and Columbus who are kind of out of it. That really just leaves the Panthers and the Devils as your only opponents in February that you really want to get those points. And the Florida doesn't really count, right? They're in the Atlantic. They're not going to be in a wild card contention. So if you beat New Jersey,
something against those Panthers.
And we've got to have a better showing than the last time we played them in Florida. I went to that game, and it was a listless, nothing. And I was in basically the worst part of the Canes season. So it'd be good to see
him. There you go.
Right. But hey, we're on the upswing. That's the big thing, I think, is we're on the upswing. The Wild don't have Fleury for today, which is kind of, you know, I still think, so Fleury's on the last year of his deal, as I recall. You even Hurt, bring him in. We're used to working with Hurt goaltenders. If he's not going to be out long, then you have Marc-Andre Fleury for the playoffs, and being
Brad,
backed up by Anderson or PK, or Anderson being backed up by Fleury. I'd pay for that.
The
right?
thought in my mind, the thought in my mind, for some reason, it stuck in my head. And it doesn't happen very often, but I wanted it to happen, where the team brings in their players to the back and Flowers coming up and they say, "Excuse me, sir, you need to go this way."
Right.
Instead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's happened in the past. It's been very weird, but it's happened in the past. That's what I was dreaming for in my head. I just think the Flower has been peppered and he has been peppered. He struggled this year, but Minnesota has stunk as well.
Still Flurry, right?
It's still the Flower, man. I would love him. Him in a Canes jersey. Mm. Yeah, that would look really good. I think I'd enjoy that. We have been on an upswing, Brad, and the upswing continues with our guests. We've had so many. We have great guests, you know, all the time.
We really do.
The streak doesn't end today. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us in the Storm Cellar. We certainly appreciate you. I loved meeting you. It was great time for the Stadium Series. Loved it. And the fact that you get to, you know, you and Brad will be holding the fort down, you know, in TD Garden, man, couldn't be two better guys. There's no two better guys I'd rather have there representing. So thank you so, so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Definitely excited to be there at the Bruins game, see Brad again. Canes have their work cut out for them. Bruins scored 9 goals last night. So yeah, that'll be a fun game. And
that was the Habs, right?
I actually saw. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Ray won't mind that.
I was not too broken up about the team that shall not be named taking the lumps there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Aaron, if anyone wants to follow you, you've got a great. I love the tweets that you make, and people can follow you and cheer you on as you continue your preparations for the Boston Marathon. If people want to drop a line to you, follow you, how do they do so?
Yeah, so it's at iMoveCar, and that reference is from a TV show, Twin Peaks. It's kind of an obscure throwaway line in the third season, 17th episode. It's a very random, obscure reference that most don't get, but it's iMoveCar. On
perfect.
Twitter.
Perfect. Nice. Thank you so much again, Aaron. Brad, a great episode.
Yeah.
We've covered a lot. I mean, we even managed to sneak Patrick Waugh's signing into this. The Oilers 13-game heater. We were all over the place, but we hit the major points for the Hurricanes as well. I guess that leaves just the one thing left to say.
Go Canes.
Go Canes.
Yeah, go Canes.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Ray and I greatly appreciate your support in helping us produce an informative and fun podcast. As always, we'd like to say that we believe hockey is for everyone. Whether you're a Caniac or a bunch of jerks, doesn't matter, as we're just a couple of jerks anyway. We would love to hear your questions, comments, and suggestions. We will do our best to answer anything hockey-related. You can reach us via email at stormcellar97@gmail.com. On Twitter, we are @stormcellar97, and on Facebook at facebook.com/stormcellar97.